Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here on a gloomy but warm summer day here. In July with me is Tom.
Howdy do.
It seems like it's been a month since we've been together.
I know. You've been traveling on a special assignment, always over holidays, it seems like.
It's amazing how that happens, right?
It's weird.
Yeah. Well, it's lots of things happened over the last few weeks. Superman Man of Steel came out, and this hard-hitting story came out. I'm not sure if you talked about it last week because I was not able to listen to the show. But Captain Crunch, the validity of his captainship was questioned.
Oh, no.
No, so you guys, so this was not top story last week, I assume.
No, for some reason that just didn't quite make it. But who would question the validity of him? I mean, he could be an admiral.
Well, here's a story. This is from Mail Online of the UK. Cap'n Crunch. America's beloved mascot, who has stood at the helm of the breakfast cereal for more than four decades, has found himself in the middle of controversy when it was alleged that he is not, in fact, a captain. In a blog entry posted last Friday on the site FoodBeast, so this is a blog, is questioning this, therefore it's become...
Oh, it's a blog. As we've determined before, these are
always legitimate. This is validity, right. Writer Charisma Matarang revealed that while the mustache Cap'n blue uniform displays three yellow stripes on his cuff. U.S. Navy regulations state that a captain is marked by four stripes.
That is correct.
The part, though, that disturbs me more than anything is the captain has four fingers. So it's like Bart Simpson and Homer and Marge. They all have four fingers.
That's right. But
we've not questioned their validity as human beings.
Well, they did do an episode where they wondered what they'd look like if they were drawn in a crazy way and they looked completely human.
And you and I are the only ones that understand that right
oh,
now,
I know.
That joke right now.
Their reaction was, ah.
In other words, Horatio Magellan Crunch is not a captain. Apparently that's his real name.
Horatio?
Horatio Magellan Crunch is not a captain. And I'm saying captain because that's how it's pronounced here. As he has been known since 1963, but rather only a lowly commander.
Amid the manufactured pretty cool, though.
Brouhaha surrounding his alleged demotion in rank and accusations of treason online. A lot of treason going on in this country.
What?
The fictional serial mascot was forced to take to his Twitter feed to refute the allegations. All hearsay and misunderstandings, I, Captain, the SS Goopy with my crew, which makes me an official Cap'n, Mr. Crunch, tweeted Monday to his 14,000 followers, along with the hashtag... Crunch chastising rumors. Cap'n Crunch clearly knows what he's talking about. Master's Handbook on Ship's Business states that a sea captain is a licensed mariner in ultimate command of the vessel, irrespective of rank.
I'm going to bring out my pop culture knowledge here. It's the Guppy, the SS USS Guppy.
Thank you.
Aha, I'm here for you.
I just know who the Soggies are. Or the Soggies ruined cereal. See, we didn't need Cap'n Crunch because the toys weren't that good in Cap'n Crunch.
They're like the Cavity Gang, those guys.
That's right. And again, you and I are the only ones who know that in this studio right now. Or in this listenership. The cartoon mascot addressed the Captain Gate once again Tuesday, revealing himself as a Shakespeare aficionado when he paraphrased a verse from Romeo and Juliet. So much fuss about my name. Oh, be some other name. What's in a name? That, which we all Cap'n Crunch, by any other name, would taste as sweet. I'm kind of getting lost here in the story, but it's pretty funny.
It's fascinating, though.
It was not before internet wits jumped aboard Captain Kerfuffle, trying to justify his captain rank. Okay, this was the hot story. NBC, CBS, ABC all reported on this during my special assignment. So I thought the only station here in Minnesota is probably KLBB that'll have this exclusive scoop.
Well, it's kind of weird how those, you know, there's so much happening in the world, but one little story like this, since it's an American icon, will just bring out the flame wars on the internet and just make people angry and really have discussion about something that's completely meaningless.
I'm glad that we have the internet because I'm thinking all these rageful people would be on the street right now. Now they're on their computers or phones. They're not taking to road rage or taking to writing letters to celebrities. They're actually leaving terrible answering machine messages.
They'll send you terrible messages on a post.
They're out there tweeting, hey, in the world of fast food and answer machines, we got it rough. Hey, we have a Captain Crunch commercial, right?
Yes, we do.
Let's hear it.
Attention! Smedley the Elephant will now attempt to break the track record for bike racing. For Captain Crunch's peanut butter cereal, Smedley can do almost anything. It's the honest of peanut butter cereal, a dandy part of any nutritious breakfast. Go, Smedley!
He didn't break the track record.
No, but he broke the track.
That'd be Dawes Butler, the voice of Cap'n Crunch. He sounds a little bit like Jim Backus and Johnny Olsen on Price is Right, though.
I was just thinking he sounds so familiar to me, and I cannot
quite place
it.
Thurston Howell the Third.
Ah.
So have we learned something today? Have we learned the value of Cap'n Crunch today?
Have we determined then he is, in fact, a commander?
Because it's his own vessel, the SS Goopy.
Oh, he can be Guppy. Whatever he wants.
He can be whatever he wants. And I think if he has three stripes, he can have four fingers.
All right, sticking with Captain then.
Sticking with Captain. Okay, we have a great guest today. We have Karen Falloon, formerly of KSDP Radio TV and WCCO Radio. And we also have a surprise guest calling in today.
I literally have no idea who
this is.
You
have no idea, and Karen has no idea.
I don't.
We don't. I said, if I told you who it was, it's not a surprise guest anymore.
Even when I threatened you, you didn't tell me.
I might hang up on him. I don't know.
Karen did threaten me, but we have a lot of fun today. So we're going to talk about meteorology, storms, and everything else that's going on right now, and what Karen's been up to the last few years, because Karen has not been on radio until today. Well, you've been at NPR a little bit.
A little bit.
Let's take a break, James, Tom, and then we'll come back. Hey, it's back from vacation here. I got to get all the names right.
It has been about 3 weeks.
About 3 weeks. What are you talking about? We were live last week with Jack. What are you talking about?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was the history of Minnesota sports and coping with losing.
Well, we're used to that here.
So it was all about how we came so close, a few little stories about, you know, stuff just kind of going wrong at the last second.
How could that ever happen?
Who knew?
Okay. All right. We will be back after this break on Flashback Twin Cities on KLVB Club 1220.
Let's take a look at the traffic right now with John.
Karen Carnes.
This hour. Now for a look at some of the stories coming up.
Tom Green.
Right here at Eastern Montana, getting ready to move into the Western Dakotas.
Karen Falloon.
Big Apple yesterday. We'll check in with Georgetown.
Ed Cato on sports. Overnight news developments and the first local news of the day. Eyewitness News Morning.
It's a great promotion from 1984. Eyewitness News Morning.
That's a long time ago.
Karen, not too long ago. Not too long ago. Karen Falloon, former KSDP and WCCO meteorologist, our guest here on Flashback Twin Cities. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Thanks for coming down to Stillwater today.
Oh, no problem. Nice city. I love being in Stillwater.
It's a great time. It's a great time. And it's dry. I know you forgot your umbrella, but we'll try to get this interview done and get all the tough questions out so you can run to your car and
all right, that
avoid the
good.
Rain. So we were talking about before the show that you are not from Florida. We want to make that very clear. You're
nope.
from Michigan.
What? Detroit.
Detroit. And you went to Florida as a child.
Yes. My father ended up working in the aerospace industry and on the manned space flights, and so he took his whole family to Orlando first, and then we moved over to the beach.
So it's kind of a change from Michigan to Florida.
Yeah.
Now, did a lot of meteorologists come from Florida, and I'm guessing because of the hurricanes and the winds and the rain, that fascinated you, I'm guessing.
A hurricane got me hooked, mm-hmm. and when it did, my dad brought maps home, put them under plexiglass so that I could track the hurricanes. That was my job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a hurricane pass through the city I was living in, which is Orlando, Hurricane Donna,
mm-hmm.
in 1960. And that got me hooked. Mm-hmm. After that, I was reading everything I could about the weather.
And then went to Florida State University, correct?
Yes, I did, in their meteorology department.
And now, was your idea to be in TV, or was your idea to work in the science part of meteorology?
Actually, it was more in the science part and work with the National Weather Service. And I did for a time, but then the folks that worked for Hubbard to find people across the country, they found me in Florida.
So you're saying Hubbard had consultants?
Hubbard had consultants, yes. But I was in the right place at the wrong time. I don't know how you want to describe it, because I went to work with a friend of mine at a television station. He says, come on, come take a look at what I do. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, they asked me if I wanted to be on TV. And I said, no, I hate the camera. Don't take a picture. And then I went home and told my dad. And my dad said, are you nuts? Yes, you want to go at least try out. At least you could say, that's more than if you go try out, then you can tell people that you tried out. And he said, that's more than most people can say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had a point. I couldn't argue that.
Right.
So I ended up being on a television station in Tallahassee.
Okay. And didn't Hubbard have a station in Tallahassee? They had a station down there, I think.
Well, I don't know if there was any, connection.
Mm-hmm.
I was at WCTV in Tallahassee, and that's where they found me. And I got a call from the consultants, and they said, could you please come up and interview with us? And then I ended up coming. So Hubbard brought me up here.
And how was that? So you're in Florida to Minnesota. Now, mm-hmm. what month did you come up here?
I came to interview. I came in the middle of the summer.
Okay, so you didn't come
July.
So you didn't come in January when
no.
there was 3 feet of snow,
no.
Or I should say May yeah. or June, there's 3 feet of snow.
And being the meteorologist that I was, I looked up in my little, you know, all my records and books and to see what the temperatures were going mm-hmm. to be in January. And I looked at the news director who sat next to me at the desk, and I said, it's 16 degrees, average 16. He goes, oh, stop, you're whining, you'll get used to it.
Wow.
So I said, okay, I'll go give it a shot.
That's a great recruiting tool. Stop whining, you'll get used to it.
I know. But that's exactly what he said. And so I ended up coming up in July, and the day that I arrived to move to Minnesota, there were severe thunderstorms, and I ended up in the KSTP office watching behind the scenes as to what was going on when they were live on the air reporting all the warnings and the hail and whatnot.
So were you in the war room?
I was in the war room.
The war room is pretty incredible place.
Just doing the best I could to stay out of the way because things were flying back and forth.
Were you the only woman?
Yes.
How was that?
Well, it was a little different, but I was used to it because I was with the National Weather Service, and that was all men. And they eventually accepted me into the National Weather Service office.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a new situation for me, but it was getting used to all the different egos.
Right. Well, we had Lindsay Strand on a couple months ago, and she was one of the first female
yes.
political reporters, and you're working with very male politicians and very male reporters. And I've seen some promos we have on tcmedianow.com, and there's these 7-8 meteorologists, all men, and then you.
And then me.
You know, you watch the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Mary's still the one making coffee for everyone and still being everyone's mother. Did you feel there's some roles that you ended up having to take on, or were you treated as an equal of these guys?
I was an equal.
Mm-hmm.
However, because I was the new person,
mm-hmm.
I was the one that would get up at midnight and have to do my own makeup and my own hair
mm-hmm.
and then get ready for the ag program that was on at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, Ag Day.
Ag Day. Yes, you remember. Ag Day. And I did Ag Day, and then I did the weather in the morning on television,
mm-hmm.
and then I alternated back and forth between KSTP AM and KSTP FM, and it was just a matter of flipping a switch on my end so that I would do all of those things by the time I finished at noon.
Wow, that's a long day.
Yeah, that's a very long day, but it was a lot of fun, and I got to work with Nap and Donuts on KS95.
And Michael Donuts just unfortunately left us about 2 months ago.
Yeah,
bless
his
heart. Yeah, he was a great guy and a great radio personality who should have been on radio a lot longer than he was.
I agree.
But you were doing news radio, you're doing comedy morning drive radio, you're doing
mm-hmm.
that's a lot of toggling between three different formats.
I don't know. You know, looking back on it, I think, what was I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
mm-hmm.
just it was 6 days a week. And I did that from 1981, 82. All the way to 1989
mm-hmm.
before I got an offer from WCCO to come to their radio station, which I jumped at because suddenly my duties and the time on the air, I would go from 6 days a week to five.
Mm-hmm.
I would be making a little bit more money. And although I was still on the early morning show, the hours were better.
Mm-hmm. And you weren't doing weekends anymore either, were you?
Nope.
And you were
not
doing,
unless I was filling in for somebody.
Because you were doing weekends and mornings and, mm-hmm. and Channel 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's play. Actually, I have a link queued up. Let's listen to July 15th, 1987. This would be a few years ago, but it's the anniversary would be on Monday.
This is KPTV, Minnesota's News Channel 5.
Live from Minnesota's News Channel, KSTP Channel 5, this is Eyewitness News Morning.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, July the 15th. I'm Wendy Lubavitch, and I'm joined by Bob Bruce this morning.
Good morning, Wendy. First off, let's go up to the Weather Center, where meteorologist Karen Falloon is gathering the facts of a changing weather situation. Karen?
Oh, it's going to change a little bit. It looks like our fall-like weather over the last couple of days will give way to more midsummer-type activity. This morning, though, it's gorgeous. Partly cloudy skies. Temperatures have dropped into the mid-50s. Right now, it's 56 degrees. The dew point is 53. The relative humidity is 90%. Winds are calm, and that pressure is rising. I'll tell you about a gorgeous day today with a return to midsummer-type weather in just a few minutes.
Okay, thank you, Karen. In the news this morning, Minneapolis police shot...
There you
go. Oh, it's so funny because you and I were just talking off the air about Bob Bruce, because he's the one person that I do see regularly, although he doesn't see me. He's in Pittsburgh, or at least was the last time I checked. So I see him on the air in Pittsburgh when I go visit family.
Yeah, and Bob left TV like 2 years ago.
Did
so
he?
He's
see?
His own consulting firm, but that was Bob's first day as a news anchor.
Oh, that's okay.
But we went up to Karen Falloon in the weather war room to get some hard-hitting facts for the day.
Yep, I was right there in front of all that equipment.
And did you know how to use that equipment?
I did, as a matter of fact. I was by myself in the mornings most times. I won't say all the time. And so I was required to go in, and all the graphics and things that we were required to prepare, I was the one that did those things, though.
And I'm actually just getting our guest lined up here, so I'm still listening to you as we talk here. I'm not texting. But,
this is the surprise guest you absolutely refuse to tell me about.
I do refuse to tell.
At least let me know if it's a man or a woman that I'm looking for on the phone. Yeah, help a brother out.
You will know when we get to that point.
All right.
So talk to me a little bit about that move to CCO Radio. That you're with Channel 5 for a long time. That could have been an easy transition to leave a place. You'd moved up here and you'd work here for a few years. And
it was tough, but I had to look at, I had a son, and I had to look at, something that was a little more sane in my life, and WCCO provided that. I went to work with Roger and Charlie over at WCCO in the morning.
Boone and Erickson. And that's, the chance to work on that show, which was, at the time, the number one radio show, morning show in local radio in the country. And in record books of...
Absolutely right. Now, I have to say that I did not grow up here, and so I was not here when they were on the air together. And then, of course, I was on opposite them when I did come here to be on the air, so I never really got to listen too much. I knew who they were just because you know these things in radio.
Mm-hmm.
I knew who they were, and I was very proud to have the opportunity I was really tickled to have the opportunity to work with them and learn from them. And I did. I learned from Charlie. I learned from Roger. They're quick wit. And I absolutely cherished the time I had with them.
That's great. Why don't we do this? Let's go for a break. Our mystery guest just confirmed that he's going to... Okay.
Oh.
It's a he.
He's narrowed it down.
He's going to call in. We'll come back, and we'll come back with our mystery guest. And don't reveal who it is until we are on the air, okay?
All right.
And there he is. Okay, we'll go to a break on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Tom Osmond with my guest Karen Falloon. And is our guest ready to go?
Oh, most definitely.
Should guest, are you on the air?
I am.
Karen, do you recognize this voice?
No, not by two words.
Okay. Where are we calling you? Where are you calling in from, guest?
South Florida.
Dennis.
Hey, you say Florida, and I just give it away. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing great, Dennis. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm okay.
We didn't have
I'm
enough
actually,
Floridian.
You know, I'm staring at retirement maybe about 6 years down the road, and my wife and I are still going to make a beeline for the Twin Cities.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
We didn't have enough Floridian meteorologists in studio today, so I thought we'll have one on because Dennis says he might have worked with you a little bit when you first came to KSTP.
Yes, the very first days there was Dennis Felkin, and like I told you when we were talking about my first day at KSTP, it was severe thunderstorms. I mean, the storms were green, there was hail everywhere, there were high winds, and Dennis was on the air live.
So I have both of you on. Dennis, thank you for calling in today. You were our mystery guest. I didn't want to give it away because it's just much more fun for you to pop in, and I couldn't get him to fly up, but I got him to call in.
Darn.
But 26 years ago, on July 23rd, 1987, now is this a date both of you remember?
Mm-hmm. I do.
The Twin Cities metro area was hit with a powerful line of thunderstorms that produced tornadoes, damaging straight-line winds, and historic flooding rains.
Right, the superstorm.
That mm-hmm. is correct. Just after 5 p.m., one of the storms produced a strong tornado in Maple Grove that destroyed 14 homes and damaged over 300 homes. In fact, there was line winds of 70 miles per hour, which cracked windows at the Care 11 station in Golden Valley.
Wow.
Dennis, you might have been there that night.
I was there that night.
And I was not on the air, but I was out in it.
You were out canoeing or?
No, actually, a friend of mine had a retail store in Burnsville, and it was in a strip mall. And when the rains fell really hard, really fast, suddenly the water from the parking lot started washing in to the front door. So it was completely flooding the store that I was in.
We have video of Southdale Mall. It's a flood, and people are canoeing through Southdale and through Edina. It's incredible. Dennis, tell me about what you remember about that night.
Well, I remember I worked the early morning, so I had been up since about 3 o'clock already and had gone home about 10 o'clock and was actually doing work at home, and I knew all of this stuff was going to be coming in. I lived in Plymouth at the time, and I'm watching all this stuff going on, hearing the sirens come in, and then about 6:30, the phone goes off, and it's the assignment desk at Karen. It says, come in to work. We need you.
Yes.
So I came in, and I worked with Paul Douglas through that evening, and I remember Doug and I looking at each other saying, you know, this is going to turn into a flood event really, really fast, and we better start going on the air with this thing really fast. So we did, and then about 10 o'clock, they decided, let's send Felkin out as a reporter because we're going to just stay on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to get to the airport, and we're on 494, not far from the stadium, and all the underpasses are flooded. And yet the care photographer I was with decided, might a little SUV can go through this. Well, it didn't. We stalled right under the underpass, and I looked at him, and he looked at me like, okay, now what are we doing? And I said, we're going to get out of this car is what we're going to do. So he grabbed his camera, we opened the door, and of course all the water came in, and that was the end of that vehicle. And somehow we managed to get to the airport, so I did that story. And I remember the last line I did in the story, I'm showing video of the sprinklers going off at the international airport, and the tagline was, and despite 10 inches of rain, the sprinklers are running at Twin Cities International.
Yeah,
that's what I remember about that.
I went home, got
3-4 hours of sleep, and then came back and did another story for the 5 o'clock that day.
You know, we did a lot of that. We did a lot of that where we were working right around the clock and then would go home and have maybe 2 or 3 hours of sleep. There were a couple of times in snowstorms where we were sleeping on the floor mm-hmm. rather than go home.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember that part of the problem with the flooding, I mean, yes, that was a lot of rain. It was historic. But just like 3 or 4 days prior to that, there had been heavy rain. So the ground was already soaked. And so it took no time at all for this rain to collect in the below the underpasses and to flood businesses and homes.
And you guys must have worked together on a couple of these big tornadoes too. Even prior to that, you must have, you know, the Orlesville tornado or the was one in 83. Dennis, wasn't there a tornado in 83 too? I'm trying to get my tornadoes right here.
What year are you talking?
There was the Roseville tornado. And was that 81?
Well, yeah, the Roseville tornado was 81. I was at Midway Hospital with my wife. We were having twins that weekend.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that was the infamous Gene Rubin going on a year and quoting him saying, and you'll know what to do. Yeah, right, Gene. Sometimes Sarah knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sometimes we were just flying by the seat of our pants.
Right, yeah. So I was out of the office for that.
Well, I'm glad you stayed with your wife, Dennis, and didn't go over to the station to work on Doppler for the night to show the tornado.
No. And in fact, as I remember, we had just received that Doppler radar. So when John Dooley was looking at the radar, we had the signature, but we really weren't 100% sure what we were looking at because we'd never been through that before. So when Dooley ran to the roof and could see the funnel over Edina turning black, he knew he had a touchdown, and he knew he had a Doppler signature on the radar.
Wow. You have a better memory than me, because as you're talking, as you're saying these things, I could not have remembered that on my own, but I do remember John running up to the roof and coming back down. Yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
You put a Doppler in the building, and you still have to go up the roof to
isn't that
point
something?
Your tornadoes.
Hey, nothing beats a set of eyes.
No, and my guests today, Dennis Felkin and Karen Falloon, both at Channel 5, and Dennis went to 11, and Karen went to CBS, CCO,
Radio.
Mm-hmm. Karen, what was your most memorable storm when you were at Channel 5? Because you were on the air, and you were doing weekend weather, you were doing morning weather. Do you recall one you had to be on the air for several hours?
Right, I do. The snowstorm. It was a snowstorm.
Oh, you want to narrow that down?
Yeah, exactly. No, it was, I had just moved here, and this was my first winter, right? I told you, I came in the summer. And so, yes, having come from Florida, I was used to severe storms. I understood those. That mm-hmm. was no big deal to me. Been mm-hmm. through hurricanes, not a big deal. But when I got to the snowstorm, I hadn't seen snow since I was little. And so driving around, learning to drive around in a snowstorm. And I think we had back-to-back storms. And I remember that it was something like February or maybe even early March when we just...
Was this 82, Karen?
Yes.
Or no, 83.
83. Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes,
and
I know exactly what storm you're talking about. Yes.
I had a little Datsun hatchback.
Perfect.
You know, that was really not made for the snow. And the snow would collect in the wheel wells, and I could hear it scraping on the tires. So I got out of my car and was kicking the wheel wells. And, of course, from inside the building, it looked like I was swearing at my car. And so I never lived that down. But then just driving home after being on the air and not being able to get down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I just sort of left my vehicle at the end of a street in a parking lot at a church and walked the rest of the way. And I fell asleep sitting up on the couch once I got home.
I'm asking both of you this. At any point did you think, what am I doing here? I was in this very happy little world of Florida. Hey, sure, we have a hurricane once in a while, but now I'm walking through weather.
No, you want to know, I have to say that moving to Minnesota just made me feel better. I have to tell you that, you know, Florida, my whole family's in Florida. It's a nice place to visit, but I don't want to live there.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have anything to do with the weather, although I'm not a big fan of hot temperatures, I got to tell you, or humidity, which they have a lot of. But I missed the change in the seasons. And when I moved back to Minnesota, I thought, oh, this is what I'm missing. This is what has been so wrong. I mean, it was just wrong to have to wear shorts at Christmas in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people don't think so, but I do.